Well, thank you all for being here today and to this press availability for the audit of the St. Louis Recorder of Deeds. And with me, I have Jeanette Eves, who is the audit manager, and Gail Garrison, who is a senior auditor. And they were both involved in the preparation of the report, which I think y'all have had a copy of. Today, I'm just going to go over some highlights in the report and then allow some times for questions that y'all might have and make sure that you understand what's in this report. So, to start, this audit confirms the mismanagement of public resources that many of you have reported on in the past. Throughout this report, you will find examples of a lack of transparency, accountability, and responsiveness that citizens expect from their elected leaders. Public officials must expect independent review and to be held accountable for making improvements that better serve citizens. I'm frustrated that Recorder Carpenter continues to defend past actions despite repeated findings of mismanagement. It's a disservice to the citizens of St. Louis when these opportunities for necessary change are dismissed. When given the opportunity to respond to the audit report, which you will find written responses from the recorder in the audit report, she was generally dismissive about actions that she took that violated state law and generally did not take responsibility for individual decisions she made as recorder or for the overall management of the office. Now, let me give an example of that. My audit found the recorder's office violated purchasing laws. This includes spending more than $2,000 from the records preservation account for rugs in the recorder and the deputy recorder's private offices. Now, the record preservation account is a special revenue fund that is funded by fees that are charged. So these are public assets that go into this account. And by law, you're only supposed to spend the record preservation fund on record preservation and related technology. However, in a written response to the audit, the recorder stated that the rugs were part of necessary renovations for technology. In total, Recorder Carpenter spent more than $300,000 from the record preservation account inappropriately or without proper transparency. Some of these expenses did not appear to be in regards to record preservation, including food, entertainment, furniture, office decorations. The recorder also used the account to pay for travel and conference expenses that were not documented as being related to record preservation. Also, part of that $300,000 required bidding processes were not followed for construction contracts paid out of the account. You might also remember that several of these construction contracts were awarded to the son of then Deputy Recorder Peggy Meeker, as noted in previous reports issued by the city councilor and the comptroller. My audit also includes information and confirmation of the allegations of nepotism that led to Recorder Carpenter's resignation back in July of 2014. So some of those things are topics that have been familiar to you, and my audit independently confirms many of those findings that have been reported on in the past. But what we also found is a pattern of financial mismanagement. And so let me give you an instance of that. My audit describes deficiencies in handling escrow accounts managed by the recorder's office. These accounts are not balanced against city records, which allows errors to go undetected. And in fact, my staff identified more than $38,000 in accounts of no record of where these funds belong to or who they belong to. To show you how this is a pattern over time, this was also included in audits that the State Auditor's Office released back in 2010 and in 1987. So this is an error that was pointed out over long periods of time that still today, as of this report, have not been corrected. And that balance continues to grow. At this point, there's little likelihood of really determining the rightful owner of these records and of those assets, and that's a disservice to those that have entrusted their assets to the recorder's office. Due to the number and severity of the findings, along with the recorder's continued lack of accountability for the office's operations, this audit received a performance rating of poor. The audit does include a number of recommendations and implementation and ways to better her office and show that she is truly serving citizens. Now, I know that was a lot of information that I kind of gave all at once, and so I wanted to allow time for questions and see if there's anything specifically that you would like me to address.
The pattern that you mentioned, is that specifically the escrow account? Going back to, like you said, 98, the one in 1980 or something, is that only with the escrow account, or is there a larger pattern that you're referring to?
There's a larger pattern. So if you take a look at this report and have a bird's eye view or kind of take a step back, and what I think this is really saying is that there is a pattern of financial mismanagement, and there have been several opportunities over time for policies to be implemented, for fixes to occur that have been disregarded. And that escrow account and a $38,000 growing liability, that's one issue. But if you look back, whether it be in this report, the violations of law or poor financial mismanagement, some of the things that have been confirmed by the city councilor's report and the comptroller's report, if you look back at audits from 2010 and 1987, along the way there have been opportunities and instances in which there can be better service to citizens, more transparency, accountability, efficiencies, and those have been disregarded. I'll give you another specific instance of something that we found in 2010. We know that there have been issues related to a city-owned vehicle, city-used vehicle, which now has been put back into the city fleet. But back in 2010, we said that you need to use to keep mileage usage logs to show how you're using that vehicle. We said that you need to have better policies for purchases for the record preservation fund. We said that the record preservation fund needs to be balanced just like you balance your checkbook, and the checks need to be issued by the city treasurer just as they under state law. So again, it's a lot of this is repeated opportunities to correct things that have not been corrected over a long period of time.
On the construction contract, I read through it, and it seems like the recorder is trying to pawn that off on the Board of Public Service. It was kind of a convoluted situation. Where do you feel she went wrong in that particular situation, besides the fact that a relative of an employee got the contract?
So state law says that if you have purchases over $4,500 that they need to go out to bid, and over $6,000 they need to be advertised, and that was not done. What we have in 2009 is the former deputy recorder's son creating a design, and then giving that to BPS to go through a bidding process. Then the recorder evaluated those bids, the recorder's office evaluated those bids, and selected the son's bid. And BPS is not responsible for the county recorder, or I'm sorry, for the city recorder to follow purchasing laws. That's the fiduciary responsibility of the recorder. And so we have moved forward with that project, moved forward over time. Now we're fast forward to 2013. The recorder's office used the same design that the Sun did in 2009 and did not advertise for bids or go out to bid, received a bid from a new company of the Sun, and then found essentially a duplicate bid that was exactly the same from another company, and lo and behold, the Sun was the lowest bid. And then at that time, it was turned over to BPS to manage the construction of the project. So clearly, there were not purchasing laws followed and strong purchasing policies to make sure that you get the best price, that you get a fair price, and that there aren't conflicts of interest within the purchasing process.
What did she said the $2,700 for the rugs was a technology expense. Did she explain that? How rug becomes a technology expense?
No, just in the audit, that was part of a necessary technology renovation.
I mean, there are just a lot of, from reading this audit, it seems like it's just a pattern of sloppy bookkeeping, financial mismanagement, and really poor decision making. I know that you're probably going to go back after a while and see if anything has changed, but is this salvageable at this situation? It seems like there are so many issues there, it could take years to fix at this point.
So because this is rated a poor, we will conduct a follow-up audit. And what we'll do is give the recorder an opportunity to implement our recommendations. And then we'll go back and review to determine, has she turned those words into action? Has she implemented the things that she said she is working on and implementing? I want to see that action. And so we'll go back and evaluate that and then report those findings to the public. I think, you know, this, when I look at audits, I look at them as an opportunity. There are concrete things that can be done to better serve the public. And look, when you are a public official, you should expect independent review, but you should also be accountable for implementing improvements that will help you better serve your citizens. And this audit is an opportunity for her to do that.
And clearly, the Comptroller is not being held accountable. Your office is not in charge of holding them accountable. What's going to happen going forward now? You know, you could do audits forever and nothing might not change. Who's going to hold her accountable?
It's my job to hold her accountable through the audit process. And so what we do is we determine, is she following laws? Is she having strong financial management practices? Simple things like you might balance your checkbook. You would expect that a public official would do a bank reconciliation and balance their records. And it's our responsibility to present these findings to the public so the public has the information that they need when making decisions and that they're fully informed.
One of the other things that came up after she was reelected is she's not only getting her salary, but she's getting a 50,000 plus year pension, mainly because she resigned, she took her pension, and because she won reelection, essentially, she's also getting the pension from her previous service. I know that there's nothing illegal about that. There are a couple of other elected officials that are in kind of similar situation, but is that unusual? Was that something that you looked into about whether that should even be going on at this point? Because on its face, it seems, frankly, kind of bizarre that mm-hmm. it's going on. Was that part of this looked at all?
That wasn't within the scope of this audit. The scope of the audit was to look at her functions and operations of the office and her fiduciary responsibility to citizens within the operations of the office. For that level of review or to kind of address what your specific, that would be in a separate audit with a different scope.
Okay.
That
makes
sense. In the scope of looking at the office, did the audit address the issues with personnel? I had spoken to some employees who felt that they were being used for election purposes, there were computers that were being used for campaign mailers. Was that in the scope of what you were looking at, or is that?
Our audit didn't find that we didn't look into that as far as what we included in the report. You know, one thing that I did want to mention is that we referenced the comptroller and the city councilor's report in our audit, but we did independent work to verify that information. We reviewed documentation, we conducted interviews with staff, we looked at work papers, and so I think it's important to keep in mind that there's an independent review and confirmation of some of the things that have been reported on in the past.
One last thing on this. $38,000. Just so I'm clear on that, that's money that's found, but you don't know where it came or what purpose it came in from.
So it was for escrow liability accounts. So you can, someone can pay up front and then kind of charge balances as they have business with the recorder's office over time. But they don't balance that money to anything. And so what happens is over time that balance has grown as they haven't reconciled their accounts. And now there's a balance of $38,000 where they don't know where that belongs or who that money belongs to.
I have last thing for you. The preservation account, when I talked to Sharon Carpenter, I think in kind of what you described, there's a disconnect of what she feels, you know, that account, what that account can be used for. I spoke to her, she said there's a dining room where, you know, the workers sit in, and if they're not going to be able to sit in the dining room, how are they going to preserve records? And so she has, my interaction was she had a kind of a broad definition of what that money could be used for. I don't know if there's a question better for you or for your staff, but what was the definition of how that account money should be used that you were working under? And what was that interaction with her like, that disconnect?
So the it's clear in law. So we used what state law and what statute says is the purpose of that fund, which is for record preservation and related technology expenditures. And we found that she was charging things like travel to that account, but was not keeping documentation to show that it falls under those statutes at all, or would provide explanations, but not documentation or anything further to show how it was spent. So our interpretation's under state law, and I can get that statute reference for you. I don't have it off the top of my head. I think to further your thought a little bit, is that what this audit also found was that she was not submitting budgets for the record preservation account to the city in order to maximize her general fund appropriation. So in that way, she is maximizing the amount that she's getting appropriated from the general fund, which are citizen resources. Those are tax dollars. And kind of using the record preservation as a separate pot of money that she can use at her own discretion without a strong budget or oversight process. And she did not maintain an internal budget of that record preservation account either to make sure that she's spending it appropriately or managing that budget. So I think that there's several issues surrounding the record preservation account. Okay. The statutory reference, I'll just point it to you on page 16. It's on page 16, and it's section 59 is where we talk about that. So if that'll be helpful or clarifying for you.
In your professional opinion as auditor, are these things easy to correct and they've just gone uncorrected, or they need further review by her office to implement these things?
I expect that these recommendations will be implemented, and I do think these findings need to be addressed. The audit received a rating of poor because there are immediate things that need to be fixed and brought to her attention. I do think that the issues that we see here do have solutions. We've provided those recommendations in our report, and we'll follow up this summer to determine if those words have been turned into action.
The next audit will start this summer?
Let me just take a little step back and talk about the follow-up process. So what we do after issuing this audit, we allow a period of time for those findings to be, or those recommendations to be implemented, because I want that to happen. That's good governance. I want this to succeed. I want change to occur because of this audit. And so we allow a period of time and work with her to make sure that she knows that we're gonna be coming back. And we usually allow somewhere between 3 to 6 months for that process to occur before we do that follow-up audit.
How long does the follow-up audit take?
That is hard. I don't have a way to say that right now.
Would you say that Sharon Carpenter's office, how would you classify how cooperative they were giving records and talking to you during this situation?
Well, I'll put it in context of how this audit occurred, right? Because this was initiated by a governor's request back in September of 2014. And we started field work in mid-February of 2015 and then conducted field work through July of 2015. Then we met with the recorder in October. We gave her a copy of the report for her to have her responses, and she provided her responses. Normally takes about 30 days or so. We got her final responses in December of 2015, so not that long ago. You know, we asked for information. I know that sometimes audits are viewed as uncomfortable for some, but it's a necessary process that we go through.
Thank you.